Now, Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station.
Light the fuse and run now, brother, cause you ain't got a lot of time. Don't you act surprised when it all goes to hell on your dime. Bells will ring.
Imagine being one of those folks that like just finished paying off your college debt and then you find out that everybody else is going to get $10,000 from the government to pay off theirs. Like, imagine being in that situation. I can't. I'd be furious. Would you be furious? I'd be furious. 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station. I am Leland Conway. Text the show directly, 57739. Text Leland to 57739. Jump in the conversation. Love to hear how you feel about the current discussion at the Supreme Court about the president's $400 billion vote buying, bailout plan for college debt owners, people who borrowed for college and can't pay it off or whatever. The Supreme Court, according to the Wall Street Journal, is considering sharp curbs to the power of the executive branch. By the way, this case has bigger ramifications than just the college debt, and it's good. I hope that the Supreme Court rules the right way on this and puts the executive branch back in its place. I don't care whether it's right or left. I don't care whether it's a Republican or Democrat. We don't elect a president. We don't elect a dictator. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. I unfriend you. You have to probably be a little bit older to get that commercial from, I think it was Geico or whatever, the little old ladies talking about Facebook, back when Facebook was popular, with the young folks, and now it's just with the old folks, which I'm active on Facebook, so I guess that makes me an old folk. So I should stop making fun of anybody that's older because I'm there. Honest to God, total side note. I feel like my body's falling apart. I've been jogging my dog like twice in the last 2 weeks and just falling hard. Told my wife last night, I'm like, I feel like all my joints are falling apart. Anyway, I'm in pretty good shape for a 47-year-old. It's just kind of funny. I'm like starting to feel it. Anyway, where was I? Yeah. Oh, the old reference. Yeah. So this is not how it works. We don't elect a dictator as president. And they don't get to just write on a piece of paper, thus I decree, and therefore it is, with executive orders. See, we have a whole lot of problems that have stemmed from this. And Trump's part of the issue, by the way. I'll go ahead and call him out. And I know some of you will get mad because anytime I say anything even slightly critical of Trump, the Rumpelstiltskins come out of the woodwork and they're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hold on a second. One of the reasons why we're dealing with ATF abuse of people's gun rights is because of Trump. He set the pattern when he said, oh, yeah, we should ban bump stocks. And that allowed a bureaucracy that is unelected to pretend as though it has the force of law. And that's how we got to, like, not just bump stocks, which, by the way, can be made with a belt and a belt loop. And while they're highly entertaining, they're not accurate. But it allowed us to not only get a ban on bump stocks, which I don't have one, don't want one, never wanted one. But I think if I wanted one, I should be able to have one. It's none of your damn business, right? To now, they're essentially coming after short-barreled AR-15s as quote-unquote pistol braces. Now they're trying to ban something that was designed to help people who are handicapped actually be able to shoot. They're trying to ban it. And the ATF gets to just decide because they want to. That's all started by overreach of executive power. So instead of our Congress passing laws, which they now are held accountable to by the voters, you and me, we have bureaucracies and presidents that you could just write something and it's the limit. It becomes law. And that is what the Supreme Court is going to step in and consider here, because it goes much farther and wider than just the issue of college debt. But we'll stay focused on that because that's the case that brings this before the Supreme Court. According to the Wall Street Journal, the conflict between the executive and judiciary that has been growing in recent years will be on view when the court hears arguments over the Biden administration's roughly $400 billion plan to forgive federal student debt for tens of millions of borrowers. Two cases before the court give the justices an opportunity to set strict limits over the president's ability to implement policies without explicit authorization from Congress. The move would limit President Biden's ambitions at a moment when he faces few prospects of legislative breakthroughs. Okay, so let me dive into some of the audio here, because I want to back it up to what I said at the beginning. How would you feel? And I don't know, maybe you're in that boat. Maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, you paid off your college debt. You worked hard all your life. You gave up. You sacrificed vacations, a nicer car, maybe even part of your kids' college to get your college paid off. How do you feel when the president comes along and just throws $400 billion, $500 billion? And that's interesting, too, because the average amount of college, I don't know what the average amount of college debt is. I can't off the top of my head think, but I think it's more than $10,000. So it's like $500 billion that doesn't even deal with the issue. Which, by the way, and we'll get into this later in the program, but this is another one of the problems that I have with this. See, corrupt politicians like Joe Biden are not interested in solving problems. They love problems. They're not interested in solving them. Problems are opportunities for them. They can use the problem to corruptly go after more votes and continue to just do whatever it is they do to keep and preserve their power. That's what they do. They're not solving the problem. The problem isn't going away just because we spend this $400 billion. The problem's not gone. It's still there. Because what's the problem? Why are kids in so much debt? Well, one, we're sending too many kids to college. Not all of them need to be there. And that's not an insult. It's just a fact. And two, colleges are running rampant with what they charge because they can. Because the government will back any freaking loan that a college makes. So instead of saying, hey, and you know what? I could actually entertain my friends on the left. To those of you who listen to this program who typically disagree with me politically, I'm going to ask you to take your politics hat off and just listen to me for a second. Let's see if we can find some common ground here. If we were two intelligent people, and I'm not saying you're not intelligent if you're on the left. I'm saying that the president is not intelligent. If, let's say you and I were having a conversation. You're on the left. You disagree with me about this. You say, hey, man, these people got in a bad bind. We should help them out. Okay, cool. That's where we start, right? I disagree with that, but we start there, and we're two intelligent people having a civil conversation. You would say, hey, man, this is not cool. It's not fair. These guys got into the colleges got them into this because the colleges roped them out. Like, okay, all right, we have common ground. Bam. We agree the system is broken. I might even be able to hear you if you say, I think we should help people out that are in this situation, if you would at least say to me, but your ideas about fixing the problem are also good, so let's do both, right? Like, intelligent people would arrive at that place. Okay, I'll compromise. I'll give you $200 billion, pay off $5,000 in college debt. Again, I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm saying this is what intelligent people who have civil conversations come to the conclusion when both sides of an argument are trying to achieve the same goal, right? Oftentimes, we all have the same goal. We just have different ideas for how to achieve it. So we have to find, where's the common ground? Is the common goal the problem of college expense? Or is the problem goal, is the goal of this situation to just allow President Biden to write down on a piece of paper how much money he wants to throw at the problem in order to buy votes from young voters, and then he can do it again and again and again? Because the problem becomes convenient for him while inconvenient for everybody else. That's a corrupt politician. Intelligent people will say, well, let's solve the problem and maybe take care of those that got hurt by it. Okay. We can at least have a compromising conversation at that point. And again, I'm not saying I agree with you that we should pay off college debt. I'm saying I would go a lot farther towards your position if you at least acknowledge my position, and that is that we need to solve the reason why it's so expensive in the first place. So if we came out of this by saying, all right, we'll give $200 billion to people, $5,000 a loan, and we'll also tell colleges and universities, you have to use your own endowment to back the loans. The government won't do it anymore. You want to talk about literally stopping the meteoric rise in costs for college on a dime? That's your number one solution right there. Number one solution. And then you call academia to get to the table and you go, hey, if you guys want people to keep coming to college and borrow money, we're capping it. Like, the government's not going to help you out anymore. What do you think colleges will do when the government says, we're not backing any loans anymore? You guys have to back it yourself. You got billions of dollars in your endowment. You got to back it. What do you think the colleges will do then? Well, they'll start going, I don't think we need the underwater basket weaving anymore. Right? Like, that's what they're going to say. They're going to be like, I don't think we need to study the in-depth life of the artist Pink. Right? Like, I don't think we have to do that anymore. We don't need that class. That class is gone. And they will start, and they will be like, maybe we should advise people that humanities isn't the most profitable four-year college degree to get at a college of $60,000 a year in tuition. Maybe going $250,000 in debt for a $60,000 a year salary isn't a good idea. Right? And when that happens, maybe the high schools and the advisors in high schools will start telling kids, you know what, let's talk about maybe a trajectory for some sort of technical college or some kind of sort of technical schooling. Or, you know what? You should. You have a really good business mind, and you're very mechanically inclined. Well, let's talk about how you could potentially start a mechanical business or a heating and cooling business or a plumbing business. Saying that to kids that are like 14, 15, 16 years old. Maybe we could start recognizing, like Europe does, a path that would be good for those kids and maybe encourage them towards that. Not force them, just encourage them. Maybe all of those things would lead to a solution. See, if the problem goes away, then Biden doesn't have the power. And that's an issue. I'm going to play a soundbite for you. This is Education Secretary Miguel Cardona. And he's talking to MSNBC. And actually, what's interesting is today, I don't know what happened. I don't know what they put in the water for these media outlets. But they're kind of challenging Biden on this. I actually do know what's happening. I don't think the media wants Biden to run again. And I think the Democrats don't want him to run again. And I think they're trying to find some way to angle him out. So it's okay to challenge Biden now. Like they've all gotten the memo that it's okay to challenge Biden a little bit. So I'll just play this exchange between MSNBC and Miguel Cardona, the education secretary, about this issue in which he says, this was about the pandemic.
How do you make this fair, though? Because there, I believe the concern might be that there will be future legal challenges and there are many things to consider when you forgive some loan debt, but not other loan debt. And then you have people who have paid off the debt.
Okay. I'm gonna play his answer in just a second, but I think that a fair question? You guys all agree that's a fair question? We all agree, right? We're all in the same car. We're all together in the clown car that is Leland Show. Okay. So we agree this is a fair question, right? What about the people that have already paid off their debt? What about people that are in more debt than that? What about people that are just deadbeats and they don't want to pay it back and they don't think they should pay it back? What about those people? Why are they getting something that no one else is getting? These are fair questions, okay? So here is Education Secretary Miguel Cardona's answer.
All right. You know, as the president said, we believe it's fair. It's based on the pandemic. We know that after national emergencies, when loan payments are paused, when it's time to restart the loans, there's up to 20 times the amount of defaults.
Hold on a second. Let's think about that for a second. Let's dissect this part of the answer. What you're telling us is that your policies don't work and you know it. That's what you're telling us. If you pause the payments to help the people, but pausing the payments leads to 20 times more default, how have you helped the people? No. I mean, that's what they're saying, right? This is a larger commentary on economic systems altogether, right? Because what we got during the pandemic was a preview of socialism, where the government controls the economy, and they can shut down whoever they want to shut down, and they can help whoever they want to help. That's socialism. Which is what I love. I love when people like Bernie Sanders, God bless him, and his followers, they're all gung-ho about socialism. Like, socialism fix all the evils of the corporate world, because the corporate world is so greedy. And I'm like, you understand that greed is not it's not an element of an economic system, right? You understand this? Like greed is not an element of an economic system. It's an element of human being. By being a human, you're gonna have greed. It's one of the emotions that we experience that gets distorted. Like, a normal healthy emotion is want, desire. That's normal and healthy. I want G-Wagon, a Mercedes G-Wagon. I want a Mercedes G-Wagon. That's normal, healthy desire, right? So I might, over time, put back some money until I can afford it, right? That's a normal, healthy desire. But I want it so bad that I'm willing to lie, steal, and cheat to get it. That's greed. I'm willing to screw people along the way to get it. That's greed, right? The want and the desire took over my soul, and it ate away and my identity and my character, and I began to act accordingly. That is a human emotion. That is a human distortion of a human emotion. That is a product of being a human. We all have to watch out for greed. And this is the thing. If you go back, which I have, and study the socialist countries and their leaders, it's all supposedly about abolishing greed of capitalism, right? That's why that was the logic behind, we're going to shut these businesses down, but we're going to give them money. Command and control. What ends up happening is that the greed currency just shifts, right? In a capitalist system, the greed currency is money. And in a socialist system, the greed currency is power. Now, let me ask you, and I'm trying to be honest with you, because I'm kind of hoping maybe I'm getting through to some of my lefty friends here. But I want you to sit back and think about which is worse. Just for a second, be intellectually honest. Which is worse? is the currency of greed power, or is the currency of greed money? Which of the two is worse? Now, granted, on the money side, there'll be some power associated with the money, but on the power only side, there's oppression and a lot of other things. Like, let me give you an example. So, if a guy owns 18 franchises and he's beating me out, I'm across the street and I only own one, and he's beating me out because he has bigger scale and all that kind of stuff, right? He theoretically, under normal capitalism, not under this crony corrupt crap that we have here now, but under normal capitalism, right? Not capitalism that's been infiltrated by socialism and government, which is what we have, but under normal capitalism, I have options. He can't use the long arm of the law to shut me down, right? I can stand, if he has a hamburger shop on one side of the street and he's selling for $2.99, I can sell for $2.75 if I want to. He can't do anything about that. Under socialism, because I'm not a member of the Politburo, I'm not a member of the whatever the ruling class is, I don't get to have a say, because greed's currency is power. It's pure raw power under that system, right? So anyway, that's like I'm kind of getting lofty on this, but in his answer, he's basically saying, well, we know that when we suspend these payments, which the government did through a preview of socialism, we know when we suspend these payments that people are more likely to not pay them back, right? Like, for me as a logical person, I hear that answer and I say, wait a minute, does that mean we shouldn't suspend the payments in the first place? Oh, wait, could we back up even farther and say maybe the government shouldn't have been involved in decisions that caused people to be sitting on the couch watching Netflix and collecting government checks in the first place? Like, maybe all of that is bad policy, and you seem to be admitting that right now before our very eyes? That's what a thinking person does when they hear Miguel Cardona say this as part of the reason why we should forgive college debt. And there's more layers to this, and we'll get to it, because one of the other layers is the idea of the pandemic being a part of this, being the reason for this. And it's not. You and I both know that it's a complete charade. It's a complete charade. They've been talking about trying to forgive college debt for a long time. They did this, which is now being heard by the Supreme Court, right before the election in the midterms, because they were buying votes. These are the same people that shut the economy down so that they could rig an election. And when I say rig an election, I don't mean by rigging voting machines. That did not happen, okay? The vote was not stolen. There was no rigging of voting machines. What it was manipulated. The election was manipulated by shutting down the Hunter Biden story, by shutting down the economy to ruin a vibrant economy so that the guy could campaign from his basement on fear. That was meddling in the election. This is the same people. These same people did this on purpose, and then they dropped the $400 billion debt payoff plan right before the election so that they could get young voters fired up and out. And it worked. But now they have to face the courts. So there's much more to this answer, because I really, boy, I got to tell you, I am too much of a preacher's kid. I really went on too long there. I need to make some more points. We'll get to that. But first, coming up next, Eric Odlin's going to join us. Yesterday, we talked to Casper Stockham. He wants to be the chair of the Republican Party. So does Eric. We'll talk to him about his plans next. 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station.
And now, back to more Uncommon Sense with Leland Conway on 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station.
All right, let's roll. I'm loving your text on the college debt thing. We'll get back to this. 57739, text Leland to 57739. Keep them coming, because y'all are sending in some really good stuff here, and I will read some of these in just a little bit. First, though, we've been talking to some folks that are running for chairman of the GOP for Colorado. Obviously, the Colorado Republican Party is lost in the wilderness. I mean, let's just put it that way. It is what it is. I mean, wilderness. I don't know what was going on with the polls leading up to the midterm elections, but they got crushed. I am not a Republican. I am a libertarian-minded independent. I love liberty. And that is the reason I'm not a member of either party is because I don't like to be a part of groups. I like to be me. And I like to be allegiant to principles and not to parties. That's just me. But I respect some of what, you know, parties do and why we need them. And people that want to work within that function, because I've been there and I've done that. It's just not for me anymore, right? But it's interesting, and it affects my life and it affects your life. And that is why this is an interesting story for me. So, and I like Casper Stockholm. He was on yesterday. Very interesting guy. Very thoughtful process. And I also like this next guy, Eric Odlin, who ran for Colorado's 7th District. And he has a boatload of experience in leadership. And I thought it'd be good to talk to him as well because he'd like to be the GOP chair. Eric, welcome back to the program, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Leland. It's good to be back with you.
All right. So you went through the election and the midterms. Why in the HE double hockey sticks do you still want to have anything to do with politics?
Well, because our country's in peril and we're losing our state, and Democrat policies are ruining opportunity for my children. I have 3 beautiful children, and I'm staying in the arena with the same mission I had in running for Congress, and that's to get things back on track and to defend the attack on liberty that we're experiencing currently, and to provide a viable alternative to Coloradans who see the disastrous policies of the left affecting their lives.
So we'll get into that. A couple of things. Yesterday, I was doing an event last night, and there was a gentleman there. It was a veteran, and I said, hey, thank you for your service. And he goes, this is a great answer. He turns around, and he goes, you're welcome. This country's worth it. And I was like, wow, man, it was so profound. Like, the way he said it was so profound. So, and I kind of hear a little bit of that in your answer, right? Like, this is worth it. It's worth the fight. I get it. The other thing you said is about being in the arena, right? I think it was Teddy Roosevelt that talked to me. I'm going to tear the quote up. If I try to mess it up, I'll Google it. But anyway, being in the arena, getting dusty, getting dirty, being in there, grinding it out, that's where the battles are won. So I dig that. What do you think went wrong with the Republicans in this last cycle?
Well, I want to respond to your first 2 points. It is worth it. And I've risked my life for this country, and I also took an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution, and that's a big part of why I am in this arena. And we need good people in the political arena who are doing it for the sake of our country, for the sake of Colorado, for the sake of the people. We don't need more career politicians, especially in this chairmanship role. We need leaders who can bring the party together and present a unified front to address these disastrous policies.
Okay.
Now I forgot your.
Oh, no, no. That was, it was really just one question. I was basically asking, like, what went wrong? Like, and in a way, you were kind of answering it a little bit, but I'm looking for specifics. What went wrong with the Republican message from governor to, federal office to statewide? Everybody got clock cleaned almost. What went wrong?
Well, Leland, voters went against their self-interest in this election cycle, and I think they rejected the Republican brand. They don't trust us. We've got to restore that trust with the constituency, and we need to make them believe that we offer policies that serve their best interests. And for whatever reason, amidst a failing economy, skyrocketing crime, a broken education system, the list is long, voters still went against Republicans in 2022. And I think they were, some of it was backlash against the Dobbs decision, which I applauded. I thought it was the right constitutional and legal decision, turning it back to the states. I think in large part they rejected President Trump. I mean, we had polling that suggested his unfavorable rate in District 7 was 67%.
Right.
Democrats did a very good job of painting us as MAGA extremists, which wasn't true, but they were effective outspending us 10 to 20 to 1 in painting that narrative. And I think voters didn't really look beneath the surface. I mean, if people had really looked at who I am and my service and my policies, I think they would have supported them. But you know, it is an advertising and marketing battle, and we lost that fight.
Okay, so I hear 2 problems that come out of what you say, and I think you've correctly identified a couple of it. One, we have an issue in America of low information voters. Because the first thing you said was that people voted against their self-interest. That's number one. Number two, there's something else that, and this concerns me about politics in America, whether right or left or blue or red or Republican or Democrat. Narrative. Everything is a narrative. I mean, like you pointed out, it's like, well, the Dems' narrative was stronger than ours, or the Dems' narrative was louder than ours, or they had more money to get their narrative out. Which, again, when we break it down into just 2 narratives, how does that serve the average individual hardworking Coloradan, right? I mean, you understand where I'm getting at, right? Like the narrative is the problem in some cases, right? Instead of having discussions about real issues facing real people.
Well, that's right. And I think that in many respects, the mainstream media is pernicious. They are heavily biased, and they don't often report the truth. And
I fully agree.
You know, I don't know how many people watched my debate with Ms. Pedersen on 9 News, but it was apparent that she didn't have a grasp of the issues. She wasn't capable of articulating a vision for the way forward in a way that addressed Coloradans' greatest concerns, but nevertheless, they still voted for her, and that was deeply concerning to me. And this is something I want to help address as the chairman of the Colorado Republican Party. One, putting forth a message that has broad-based appeal, but also shows that we are trying to serve the constituents and do the right thing. I mean, we need to start electing people with character and integrity, not continuing to promulgate the corruption that is absolutely rampant in Washington, and we're seeing a lot of that come out. But there are a lot of issues that Americans need to get deeply concerned about very quickly, or we're going to be in a position where we can't reverse that.
So how do you overcome the issues that you just pointed out? The issue of a pernicious media. I don't disagree with that at all. And the other issue that I pointed out, low information voters that don't seem to have a huge amount of interest in digging deeper on some of these issues. How do you overcome that? If you're chairman of the Republican Party, how will next time be different?
Well, we need to be sober about how quickly we can do that, Leland. This needs to be a long-term strategy that we work towards for many years, starting at the local level. I believe that local activists and politicians, you know, on the school boards, on city councils, and county commissioner roles, can start an education process of restoring trust. But long term, we also have to have the right messaging. We've got to be very consistent in our messaging, and we've got to speak with truth and facts. And so this is an education process. I do think that the economy is going to get worse. Crime is going to get worse. The education system is going to get worse. The attack on our freedoms is going to get worse, all under Democrat leadership. And that might compel unaffiliated voters to start considering an alternative and looking to Republicans for those answers. And we need to be poised to answer those and show that we have concern, we have the right policies, we have the right principles, and we deserve the trust of the people of Colorado.
Two questions. One, what is that message? I keep hearing people say Republicans need the right message. They need a united front. What's that message? If Eric Odlin is the chairman of the Republican Party, what's the Republican Party about in Colorado?
Well, at its foundation, it's limited government. The U.S. Constitution and protecting individual rights. It is protecting life and respect for the sanctity of life, which it has broad-based appeal. We need to expose the extreme position of Democrats in Colorado and nationwide who want to abort babies up to the day of birth, which is unconscionable in my opinion. We have to have a measure of compassion. We have to connect with people at the level of the heart. We haven't been very good at doing that as conservatives. We have all the facts. We've got the right policies and principles that actually serve human nature and are what made this country great. But people are rejecting that because they're great marketers. They are very appealing. They give people candy while we want to hand out broccoli.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to put some butter and some salt on that broccoli and not change the foundation of what we stand for, but change how we communicate it, especially to young people. We are losing the narrative with young people, especially millennials, who think we're not compassionate, think that we don't care about the environment, don't care about the planet, you know, that we are we don't care about individual rights in some respects. Well, that's nonsense, and we've got to communicate it far more effectively in a way that is appealing.
Okay, so let me play devil's advocate. Okay, and I agree with I'm pro-life. I'm a libertarian who's pro-life, staunchly pro-life. But there's also I'm not having an abortion. My wife isn't having an abortion, and so the thing that is more pressing to me is how much money do I have at the end of the month? I'm going to play a little devil's advocate. I'm just telling you like where I stand on these things. I agree with you 100%. But in the statement that you made, imagine that I'm a 22-year-old Zillennial voter, okay? And you said, when I asked you, I said, what is the message of the Republican Party? You said, well, limited government and also right to life. And, you know, you accurately went into something I fully agree with, right? So as devil's advocate, what I'm asking is, how do you convince that person? Because somehow these young voters have been convinced that limited government is the opposite of what Republicans are doing when it comes to that abortion issue. How do we disentangle what the media and Democrats have successfully done there? Does that make sense?
Well, yes. And what you know, in my support for the Dobbs decision and overturning Roe v. Wade, this was a states' rights issue. And so, you know, Colorado has the ability to decide through the legislative process. And so I am not one for government coming in to make a bunch of mandates to change the culture in society. I think that, you know, a lot of these things need to be addressed with compassionate messaging that relates to young people who are in those difficult situations and tries to alter the culture, maybe addressing unwanted pregnancies and trying to limit that difficult decision. But I think we have a cultural issue here that isn't always best addressed by government mandates in either direction.
No, I agree. I agree. But from that devil's advocate position, you know, as a state level official in the Republican Party, you would be fighting against the state engaging in abortion, which, again, we talked about state control. So, yeah, it gets murky in trying to separate and disentangle that message. I'm not saying I disagree with you.
This is where we have to have reasonable, meaningful conversations.
Yes.
We need to have a seat at the table. And we as Republicans need to be able to understand the alternative perspectives. We need to be able to think about it by being in other people's shoes. This is
fully
about
agree.
Passion and empathy and finding a deeper level of wisdom in how we communicate. Right. That isn't off-putting, that is not overly onerous, and also we need to be in with society as it is, not how we want it to be.
Yeah, no, that final point you made is a very good one. Sometimes, as conservative thinkers, we think, oh, if it was just this way, and we can't engage on where it is. And if you can't engage I don't want to say enemy, right? Because people that are a different opinion than me are not my enemy. I don't mean to say that. But if you want to use a battle perspective, engaging the enemy being this set of policies, you can't engage it if you're engaging it in the place where it's not at, right? You have to be there. You can't have an intelligent conversation. You can't have empathy. You can't have any of the things that you said. That last point you made is the best one, because we have to start where people are in order to convince them that we do have compassion for them. I think that's a great point. Eric, always good to talk to you, my friend. Best of luck. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, Leland. Good conversation. Difficult one, but we've got to talk through these things. So
yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I love about you, is that you're willing to do that and engage straightforward. And again, that's part of the message that you were talking about. So have a great one. Eric Odlin, he's running for GOP chair here in the state of Colorado. It needs some help, obviously. Wilderness. If they want to come out of that, they're going to have somebody that can lead them on all of those points. So we'll continue. Coming up, I want to get back into the college debt payoff thing. I've got some amazing tech from you guys. We'll get into that. 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station. All right, 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station. I am Leland Conway. You can text the show directly, 577-339, text Leland to 577-39. Great having Eric Odlin and then also Casper Stockholm on yesterday, both running for chair of the Republican Party of the state of Colorado. It's got a lot of work to do. It's going to need a leader that can dive deep, and I think both of those guys did. I'll leave it to you to make the decision which one you think is the right one for that if you are a member of the Republican Party. But some texts that came in along those lines. 9307 says, Leland, a long history of Republicans in control shows they can't be trusted no matter what this guy says. They act just like Democrats when they get the power to spend. no regard for the poor taxpayer. Sorry, but his messaging failed me, and I am as red as they come, and that has failed on me. Leland, why does there have to be a Democrat and Republican thing? Why can't there be our reps and senators in our states? They believe in this, and they don't believe in that. It seems parties are here to keep things from actually being done at the top. Yeah, just interesting thoughts. And there's more of that, where that came from in terms of people. I think people are frustrated. They're frustrated. So it will be interesting to see how this goes forward in the future. Coming up next, I have your texts on the college debt payoff. Much more audio on that topic. I will get into that at 3:05. I am Leland Conway, 630 KHOW, Denver's Talk Station.